Charlie Mingus. It sounds like the fight. It's called Haitian Fight Song. It's just breaking out. We're joined by Norman Otis Richmond, I believe. Are you there, Norman?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Very good. You're the bluesologist. Why did Charlie Mingus write Haitian Fight Song? What motivated that? Tell us the story.
When he supported the Haitian Revolution from way, 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 way back.
From 1804.
Or, I don't know.
Pardon me, 1791.
I don't know if he went that far back, but Mingus was a very conscious, controversial guy, very conscious. I think he passed away as a Buddhist, but he was he was all over the place politically and very left wing. He had his own record label, he and Max Roach, which they got run out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvin Gaye had an album called "Hear My Dear," which he dedicated all the royalties to his wife. But Mingus actually had an album in the 50s. He dedicated his all his royalties to his first wife. And Mingus was born in Arizona. A Native American, Chinese, and African origin, and came out of Watts, California. Watts, California is
Watts.
He was born in Watts. He grew up in Watts. He went to Jordan High School.
Once you say Watts, a bunch of history begins to shake, right?
Yeah, Watts. That's where you went to. Norman Jewison had a. I think you said you went to his theater group out there, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Well, I did. Maybe
you remember. You remember Norman Jewison had a theater group out there in Watts.
I don't know about. I have to.
Oh, okay.
I confess.
Okay. All right.
I'm familiar with the work, but not that familiar. By the way, is Norman Otis Richmond, the bluesologist, and I'm really glad you did because you know Mingus is a legend, and to know that he named a work of his Haitian Fight Song, by putting that title on it. By putting that title on it, he knows that it's going to resonate. You're going to have to think about Haiti, and so anyway, it's quite remarkable. And I'm glad you suggested that. Now we're talking. It's of course this time of the year, Martin Luther King is a topic. I want to ask you about the way people discuss him. At the top of the show, I mentioned that for these times, you want to remember that Martin Luther King, that big moment for him, other than being, of course, the best known and most eloquent voice for civil rights struggle in America, was it at the height of it. He had the courage, because the Vietnam War was going on, he stepped forward and said, we shouldn't be fighting and having a military machine that costs billions of dollars and fighting against people of color in Asia. And that really became the moment when they sort of circled his name, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, but King was, when he proposed to, what is the word they say, when he was courting Coretta Scott, who became Coretta Scott King, he wrote a letter and basically outlined in the letter, this is 1953, that he's more socialistic than capitalistic, mm-hmm. and that he had read Capital, or probably read at Capital, in 1948.
Uh-huh.
And, he basically had to tone down his democratic socialist views because, they call him a communist anyway. He basically said the only problem or one of the few problems he had with Karl Marx was the fact that Karl Marx was an atheist. But in terms of the economic positions that Karl Marx took,
yes.
he said that he had no problem at all with
Well, look, what was he doing? The last big moments of his life were the Poor People's March, right?
And
going to support the garbage workers in Memphis. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you're right. And he also went to Ghana. He went to Ghana before Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Ghana in 1956, and he had to leave. He went to Ghana, Nigeria, came down with malaria, and had to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote all of his books in Jamaica. And he went to Marcus Garvey's grave when he was in Jamaica. Now, King was there's a speech he made in 1958 when he came back from his first visit to Africa, and he actually went country by country and talked about the whole history of Africa. This was in 1958.
Yeah.
And
I don't think that that side of him is understood at all.
It's not known.
He's thought of as a black Southern minister.
Yes.
Not as somebody who had read Hegel, which, in doing his PhD, he really, his grasp of things was really, and from his youth, we're not talking about, somebody coming up to him and saying, well, did you realize? No, he that was part of his development.
And we used to always have these, we always used to have these debates when I was going to Los Angeles City College, who was the greatest speaker. And, at that particular time, many of people on the campus were black nationalists and Nation of Islam and, mm-hmm. Some leaning towards Marxism and Maoism and all that kind of stuff. And everybody basically says that while we support Malcolm X, we thought Dr. King was the greatest speaker alive, We didn't understand everything he was saying because he used he had a lot of Scrofidelian etymology. But we knew that he could talk, as we say, he could chat.
People, they did acknowledge that, even when they were criticizing.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
but
yes.
You know, to remember his father, I don't know if you've ever seen him talk or preach, but I had a couple of occasions, not in person, but I watched him on YouTube elsewhere. He was a very eloquent, really profound speaker. When I say profound, he made some great points. His father.
Well, King was a great orator. There's no doubt about it. And he was, when he spoke, he was so serious. They say he was like Malcolm X was almost like Dick Gregory with the band when he spoke, because he was so funny.
Yes, he had great.
But Dr. King was. He had no jokes when he was speaking, but they say off camera, he was basically like Richard Pryor without a band. They say he was very, very funny. Played a lot of pranks.
He was
a prankster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had a reputation for he knew how to kid people.
Yeah,
which apparently startled a lot of people who met him. He would be a guest on a show where he'd be very serious, but it turned out he really read his host or the people around him very quickly and had very funny things to say.
And they say he was a great pool player.
Yeah, well, of course, in the case of Malcolm, you always want to remember he was a personal friend of Red Fox.
Yes, that's right.
And when you listen to the way he tells jokes, you say, well, I don't know which one gave, who was the leading guy when the two of them talked. They started off before either of them were known, right? I think they were working in the same hotel or something.
Yeah, and Red Fox, what did he say? My name is, in Little Rock, his name is Mud, right?
Yeah. and we're speaking to Norman Otis Richmond. This the King, we are just as you're outlining here, becomes larger in my opinion every year. The significance of him and what he had to say is growing. It's not as though he's a guy of one or two things that he did. If you look at him closely, there's more. Always so much more to learn about him. And I was thinking of that poem by Yevtushenko, the Russian poet, I think it was the assassination of either King or Robert Kennedy, but he said, America, what's wrong with you? Why do you cut down your tallest trees to measure them?
Well, you know, I cut you off.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, the, when, you know, when King passed away, he, I think his rating, most of the American people, white as well as black, were opposed to him. And now the black left in America have basically embraced King again because, you know, the African People's Socialist Party with O'Malley Ishitella, they have, I think they're having stuff all over, things all over America today supporting, they're talking about King being a socialist, you know, before, you know, we didn't realize.
They're just noticing now.
Yeah.
When, and by the way, they did. Everybody should look at their own personal records. Were they saying that then?
No, sir, they weren't.
It, by the way, do you remember that when the memorial, when they finally finished the sculpture of King, which is in Washington, I haven't had the opportunity to see it, but they had quoted him in such a way as to make a meaningless quote, and there was an outcry, and they had to add the full sentence so that you got the point or the significance of what he had to say. Do you remember that? There was a controversy about that?
I think the controversy was, I think they just basically called him the dreamer, and they basically took all of the wind out of what he actually said, and I think they had to change it and, you know, put something to the effect that he was anti-war, anti-militarism, and he was about something as opposed to just a dreamer. I don't know all the details, but that is correct. That is definitely correct.
It's, so, in other words, in order to understand King, we have to fight all the time to get the truth out. I mean, they said, oh, here's a statue. You should be happy. And he realized, you better watch that guy because the statue he gave you is not accurate.
Well, you know, I remember the late, great Charles Roach, your friend and mine, he started Martin's Day, and we've lost that.
Yeah.
I think that's a criticism of myself and Toronto. Someone should have, there's no way in the world, I bet you the NDP or the probably the Liberal Party, maybe even the Conservatives, they're probably paying tribute to Dr. King. Everybody's attempted to co-opt him.
Yeah, exactly. So we have to fight for the real King. And Norman Otis Richmond, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for the Charlie Mingus idea. Thank you very much. We'll see you.
You're welcome. Take care.
Okie doke. Bye-bye.